Gallup recently released a study stating that the percentage of engaged workers in the U.S., those who are involved in, enthusiastic about, and committed to their work in the workplace, is now roughly about 34%. It could be as high as 38%. So it's tying the highest level since Gallup began reporting the national figure in 2000, which means 53% of workers are in the non-engaged category. So when this happens, morale and profits take a hit. So today we're going to unpack how one company is taking lessons from elite military units and teaching companies how to create and sustain high performance leaders and teams. Essentially, how to engage the non-engaged. So welcome to the Military Wire with Mike Schindler. This is the podcast where we interview America's most elite men and women who have served this country. We share their stories of overcoming, their proven lessons in leadership, and their journey to finding mission and purpose. So joining me today is Eric Kapitulik, founder and CEO of the program. So Eric's background, former infantry officer and special operations officer with the 1st Force Reconnaissance Company, 1st Marine Division, aka that just means he was part of an elite team in the Marine Corps. He received his BA from the University of Chicago Graduate School of Business in 2005 and then founded the program in 2008. He's participated in 8 Ironman triathlons, the Canadian Death Race Ultra Marathon, the Eco Challenge, I think I said that right, the American Birkenbeiner Ski Marathon. He's summited 5 of the 7 summits, Mount Kilimanjaro, Mount McKinley, and two mountains I can't even pronounce, and most recently Mount Everest. Eric, welcome to the show.
Mike, thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, so this is great. You know, I'm looking at all your accomplishments, Eric, and, you know, I got super excited that I finished the Spartan competition. Like, I didn't even rank in the Spartan competition. And so I look at your accomplishments, and I've got to ask, I mean, you've got such an impressive career. You've done so many things post-career. What do you attribute this mindset to?
It's a great question, Mike. I think two things, and it gets back to the nature versus nurture argument. I think we're some of our experiences. This is from a nurture perspective. Yep. We're some of our experiences. And at a very young age, the biggest experience that most of us have are our parents. And I actually, as a parent now myself, I actually do things a little bit differently than my own parents did. But my parents were very much performance driven. And as an example, in high school, I could score 20 plus points in a high school basketball game. And when I finished, the first words out of my dad's mouth were going to be, "Hey, you went 6 for 10 on free throws. What's up?" And that that constant feedback of what can we do better definitely challenged me to always be in a, "Hey, I'm going to show you" type of mentality. And for me, it has been very beneficial. I'm always in the, okay, what's the next challenge? Okay, I did this, but what can I do to make it better, faster, more profitable? I mean, in everything in my life.
So Eric, do you find, I want to interrupt here just a little bit. Are you able to relax though? Or is that mindset relaxing to you?
Am I? Well, the answer is yes and no. Is it relaxing to me? No. But am I able to relax? I think yes, I am. Admittedly, how I'm able to relax and how often it is limited. It is. No doubt.
Well, the reason I asked that question, because you've accomplished quite a bit. I mean, if somebody could, you know, summit Mount Everest, they would say that's a lifetime accomplishment. And here you've done 5 of the 7. So the reason I ask that is some may view you as
an anomaly, like saying, listen, I could never walk in your footsteps. Yes, my parents, I had that similar experience where, you know, I always had to achieve, had to do better, you know, in the military, we get that achiever, you know, that achiever Charlie mentality. And then you go on and you are working with amazing organizations across the country, whether it be the, you know, the New York Red Bulls or University of Nebraska, Central Florida, GE, I mean, you name it, organizations that are top in their field. And I want to get to, because you've written a great book, The Program, and I'm going to encourage our audience to pick up your book called The Program, Lessons from Elite. Yeah, I mean, it's a great book. I mean, there's pages in here that I have earmarked, and hopefully we'll have some time to unpack that a little bit. But how does, because I know some of our audience will go, okay, Mike, this is great, but Eric's done so many cool things, working so many great people and organizations. How does your training relate to the common Joe?
Yeah, great question. I think one of the biggest challenges I have, really, you know, one of the things I, doing all the things that I've done in my life, one of the downsides to it is that people do lose the forest for the trees. And what I mean by that is the things that I've accomplished in my life. And you mentioned Mount Everest being a lifetime achievement. I don't look at Mount Everest that way. I don't look at the Ironman, eight Ironmans. I don't look at any of those things as being somehow the destination. The constant in my life is constant self and team improvement. And that just means very different things for many different people. The individual who is obese by any standards, who starts to work out, just goes for a walk, and then goes for a little bit longer walk the following day. Mike, I can't even tell you how fired up I am for that person.
Yeah, so you're talking about constant improvement. Like there isn't a destination, like maybe in this mindset, what you're talking about is you've removed the destination into and changed it into no, it's all about constant improvement. How can you move the needle every day in a positive way? Correct?
If one of your listeners wants to buy a book about how to climb Mount Everest or how to do the Ironman, don't buy this book. Buy somebody else's book, because it isn't at all what this is about. What the program, what I founded my, now our company on, what the book is about is how can we be the best versions of ourselves individually and as a team? And to do that takes, as I said earlier, just constant self and team improvement. It is not about where you're at. It's about where you're getting to.
So let's talk about that, because I opened the show with, you know, the non-engaged workforce. Over 50% of the workforce is supposedly non-engaged. So how do you inspire that non-engaged to re-engage?
Yeah, great question. I think a couple things here are at play. First, I love the terminology that you're using, because usually I'll get a question about how can I motivate those individuals?
Yeah.
And the answer is I can't say it fast enough. You don't. Motivation is an internal desire, an internal drive. So either you're motivated or you're not. And somebody from external cannot motivate you. We can, though, inspire. And as leaders, that's what we should be looking to do. Inspire our team. And as leader, I mean dad, mom, coach, teacher, business leader. We're not motivating. We're not in the motivation business. We're in the inspiration business. Now, specifically to your question, there's a few things. Number one, as a leader, never ask your team to do something that you're not willing to do yourself. If you want to inspire your team, do what you're asking them to do and a little bit more. How we behave is so, and for some people, it's it's almost everything. But how we model our behavior off of those that we are surrounded with. Okay. Number one. Now, and the only thing, Mike, that I would highlight though is I feel like there's always, and we have this attitude in our society, and I think it's very dangerous, of if I'm disengaged, well, that's because it's somebody else's fault. Other people have to do things. What I would say more than for the what the leaders need to do, what I would say is if you're disengaged, then change your mindset because you don't control others.
Yeah, but how do you change that?
Everything we do in life is habit forming. How do we change it? First of all, you have to make the decision that you want to change your mindset. How specifically? The little things add up to the big things. As we discuss with people and we always highlight to them, we don't have to work. We get to work.
Yeah, changing that terminology. Yep.
That's right. The vernacular that we use is incredibly powerful. Our thoughts become our words and our words manifest themselves in our actions. It also works in the opposite direction. Our actions determine our vocabulary, our vernacular, which in turn changes our thoughts. Changes our thoughts. So yes, as leaders, what can we do? Make sure that you're not asking your people to do anything you're not willing to do yourself. You want your people to be engaged and have a great attitude? Make sure that every single morning that you show up, you are engaged and have a great attitude as well. But then from a personal perspective, if you are disengaged, then simply make a choice to get engaged.
Yeah, Eric, see what I love about this. So, you know, in the military, right, they break everybody down, they build you back up to who they want you to be, right? Assigned mission and purpose, you get this mindset, you pay attention to every detail because that's scrutinized, right? So we start to develop this mentality. The civilians, those who don't serve, have never served, have not had that benefit of training. So you're going into organizations and essentially taking what we have learned over the years through training, constant immersion, and breathing that into individuals. And so when you say, you know, make a choice to change, I clearly get it. Like, I clearly understand it, right? That was part of our team, Navy, 100%. When you say that to civilians, those who have never served, and you've worked with some amazing companies, corporations, how do people respond to that? Eric, do they look at you and go, yeah, it's easy for you to say that, but like, how do I do that? Or do they say, no, okay, I'll just make that choice?
Yeah, more the former than the latter, for sure, Mike, right? It's a great point you're bringing up, right? And a few things. Number one, let me use the idea of excuses, okay? A disengaged workforce tends to make excuses. As we highlight, it's easy to say, hey, stop making excuses. Yeah, okay, no kidding. I get it. I know I'm not supposed to, but what specifically, how specifically? One of the things that we challenge everybody on, I talked to my wife about this, or my children about this, my coworkers about this. You are unable to use the term, I don't have enough time, or I ran out of time, or time this, time that. So if you want to stop making excuses, there's a reason why everybody says on January 1st, I'm going to get in better shape. And by February 1st, the gyms are empty. January 1st, gyms are packed. February 1st, empty again. It's because we don't go from a sedentary lifestyle to working out 7 days a week, because we might be able to do it for a short amount of time, but we have to create better habits. And being disengaged is just a bad habit that's been created over an incredible amount of time. So if we're going to change that, then we have to start to change the underlying habits that make us disengaged. One of those is making excuses. What's the biggest excuse that we hear? Time.
Yeah, have I got time?
Well, I didn't get in because of time, this, that. So what we talk about is instead of saying, hey, let's be engaged, we'll say, we can't use the excuse. That's a standard here now.
Mm.
You, if you want to use a different excuse, okay, think of one. But time is no longer going to be allowed as an excuse for anything. For anything.
You know, that's it's so. I love that you say this. I want to interrupt real quick because my grandfather, you're bringing something up that I remember. I came up with some excuse years ago when my grandfather was alive, and he looked at me, and I've never forgotten this, Eric. And it goes to what you're saying. He said, you know what, Mike, if it was worth $1 million to you, you would have found time to do it. And I've never forgotten that. I'm like, oh my gosh. So how much, what he essentially was saying is if I value it, I will do it. And I think that's what you're saying is if we place value on something, then we find a way to make it happen. So that gym analogy, which I love is, hey, just go to the gym for 10 minutes. I remember one guy, I saw him after 6 months. He looked amazing. I'm like, what'd you do? He goes, every day I made a decision to go to the gym. Sometimes it was only 10 minutes. Sometimes it was 30 minutes. But every day I said, I'm going to go and I'm just going to go because I needed to create that habit. But he put value on it. And that's what you're talking about doing, right? Is eliminating excuses. And you do that by putting value on the things that are important to you.
Mike, in what we say specifically is instead of using time, I don't have the time. I ran out of time. Instead of that, say, I didn't prioritize this. That's it. I didn't prioritize it or it wasn't a priority. Say it. By just highlighting the fact that it was not time's fault, it was just I didn't prioritize it. Now you're taking personal responsibility. And for any change to occur, right? I mean, I've never been to AA, but I have friends who have been, and in talking to them about their journey and continuing journey that they're on is first and foremost, I have to take personal responsibility for my actions. And by just, instead of blaming time, highlighting, I didn't prioritize it. We're taking personal responsibility. And once we have that personal responsibility, then what we're saying is, then I have the power to change it.
So when you're talking about creating and sustaining high-performance teams, is this one of the, I'm going to call cornerstones of what you're teaching companies is really how to prioritize? Because you prioritize, you'll do the things that are high priority, right? So when you go into organizations, Eric, are you seeing that companies sometimes are trying to do too much, not haven't figured out how to prioritize? Where do you start? Because I think what I love about what you're doing, and seriously, I don't want to say that your book, the program, is like the Bible, but because that would be sacrilege for me.
Go ahead and say it though. Still, yeah.
I'll go to confession church. After that.
That's confession. That's right. Sorry. I was looking for that word, confession. Yeah. Then go to confession. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's so many great things in here, like inoculate against stress. And, you know, I think you have one chapter in here. I think it's chapter 23 that said, don't lead by example, which I thought, man, oh, this is interesting. So there's so much good in this, but is it really, do you first start with helping companies prioritize?
Yeah, Mike, you know, one of the things you say, yes, the answer is yes, wholeheartedly. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think one of the questions you had asked is, do you typically see companies who are trying to do too much? Well, yes, but look, in some companies, if you had looked at the program when I first started the program, would you say, is he trying to do too much? Well, yes, but when you're at that point in our existence, I'm trying to figure out what to do. Right.
Yeah,
so right. In along the way, you are trying to figure out what not to do. And sometimes, yes, it's easy to look back in hindsight and be like, well, that didn't work. You were trying to do too much. Well, no, I was trying to figure out what to do. Right. Or we are trying to figure out what to do. What the much bigger mistake is, and I call it a mistake, that we call it a mistake, isn't that companies are trying to do too much. It's that organizations, companies, athletic teams, schools, families, they're not trying to do too much. They're trying to be too much. And what I mean by that is we have to figure out who we are before we're trying to figure out what we do. Both are vitally important, but we have got to figure out what it means to be us. As an example, at the program, we're selfless, tough, and disciplined. Those are our core values. That's our culture. Your core values are your culture. We have a culture of selflessness, toughness, and discipline. Our mission is to develop better leaders and create more cohesive teams. We have got to accomplish it for us to be successful. By doing it, by accomplishing our mission, it allows us to be successful in the short term. By accomplishing our mission while also being selfless, tough, and disciplined allows us to be successful in every term.
See, I love that because you're talking about identity. You're talking about identity and brand. And I think you're right. A lot of companies don't know that. And that's why there's a lot of disengaged workers, is because they don't understand why they're doing what they're doing. And what you're talking about is when you go into a company, you're essentially helping them understand their identity and why they're doing what they're doing. Am I correct? Is that a good summary?
It's a perfect summary. And Mike, I had a conversation this week with an assistant coach of a wildly successful team. He's a great person, great coach. He's very engaged. Still, one of his big challenges is that I'm talking to him about his head coach. And the head coach always talks about this kind of nebulous, like it's just a shifting mass of what's important on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. And one of the things that this assistant coach says is, God, we, as great as we are, we would be so much better. And quite frankly, my job would be better if I'm told from the head coach, this is who we are. Be it. Make every player on our team it. Talk to them. Communicate. This is what we're going to communicate. It. Meaning, these are our core values. Yes, tactics and techniques, the X's and the O's of whatever our job industry may be. Yes, of course it's important. And yes, of course we're going to train on it and get better at doing it. But we, at the same time, we have got to be consistent as to who we are.
Yeah, see, I love that. So, Eric, I mean, I know we could talk like probably hours on this because you have tapped a subject I think is so important, which is about identity, a brand, knowing who you are. Because when, the SEALs have that saying that you never rise to the occasion, you always fall back to your level of training, right? And that has everything to do with who you are and what you've trained to become. What is the one thing that you want people to know when they bring you and your team into their company? What can they expect from you guys?
Yeah, well, I think first and foremost, if there's one thing I'd want people to know, is that the SEALs stole that saying from the Marines. But other than that, the program teaches people how to be the best team leaders and best teammates that they can be. Individuals can do well, and individual talent can win games. But great teams compete for championships on any battlefield. And great teams are comprised of great team leaders and great teammates. The program, we teach people how to be both, how to be the best teammate and the best team leaders that they can be. What I'd like your audience to know about the program is that we don't just stop there, though. The program, we teach people how to be the best teammates and best team leaders that they can be. But then our experiential training provides an environment for those people then to go and develop those skills. As we discuss at length, My teammates and I at the program, what we know, not what we believe, but what we know, is that everybody's a hero when it's 70 degrees and sunny out. Unfortunately, that's not when you need them. You need great teammates and great team leaders when it's not. Everybody has the right answer when we're sitting inside a climate-controlled classroom. Yeah, unfortunately, that's not how where you prove just how great a teammate and how great a team leader you are. You prove it when you're faced with adversity. The program provides it. And through it, we don't only teach people how to be great teammates and team leaders, but we develop it.
I love that. So, Eric, I'm about we're up on the hour, and I just want to say that your book, The Program, which you wrote with Jake McDonald, Lessons from Elite Military Units for Creating and Sustaining High-Performance Leaders and Teams, is so good. And I really think that this book should be sitting on the desk of every president, CEO, leader in the country. They should be reading this book. There are nuggets in here. And you've proven it. I mean, what I love about you, Eric, is you have done it. You've summited 5 of 7 mountains. You've been part of an elite unit. So what you're saying isn't just research and hearsay. It's practical, tactical information that can be used and deployed same day and practice. So how do people find your book?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Mike, I would add one other people that I'd like to see it on their desk, and it actually would be their kitchen table, would be moms and dads too. Please, you can find more. You can find out more about the program and our leadership development and teammateship development services, as well as order a copy, or we hope multiple copies of our book, by going to our website, theprogram.org.
Yeah, perfect. Well, Eric, thanks for being on the show. And again, to learn more about Eric and the program, be sure you guys visit his website, their website at theprogram.org. You pick up the book at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And if you guys are in transition, if you're getting ready to transition and get out, and you want to discover your post-service identity, reach out to us at OperationMilitaryFamily.com, and we can discuss how you can get started to plan your best year ever after transition. Eric, thanks again for being on the show.
Mike, thank you so much for having me.